All right. LawyerTalkPodcast.com. They don't teach you that in law school. Here we talk about the real world experience versus the law school experience. I call it the ivory tower of law school experience. And we have Troy, our resident law clerk, who works for me upstairs in the law practice. You need some help, by the way. Palmer Legal Defense. Check us out. But, you know, we got to talking off the air here about law clerks. And, I mean, even that term. Like, when you started law school, what did the term law clerk actually mean to you?
Well, when I started law school, I had no idea what a law clerk even was. But it in my head, it was more like an intern. That's pretty much it. It's just a fancy word, I feel like, for legal intern.
For legal intern, yeah.
That's all it is. I don't know why we put a special title on it. But
they call it a law clerk. Like, what is a clerk? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a store clerk that checks you out at the counter.
Yeah.
There's other types of clerks that we know. But and then, you know, in the legal profession, being a law clerk for, say, a federal judge is that's a lawyer job that's got quite a lot of prestige.
Yeah, I think that last hearing we were at where there was somebody who was like probably in, I don't want to guess his age, but he was like later, like 50s or something.
Call
like that.
My age.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Around your age. And he was clerking and he was
full blown lawyer and yeah. His job was to do research and writing on behalf for the judge to help the judge decide what to do. And a U.S. Supreme Court law clerk is like the highest level of prestige. And you know, you're working on the cutting edge stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So law clerk has just got this nebulous, undefined concept that people just don't get. But I've always had law clerks, like I've treated them like interns.
Mm-hmm.
And or maybe even externs. You're actually getting credit, aren't you?
Yes. So I imagine most schools do this, but there's externship credits where if you clerk at what they determine as a recognized like law firm, which pretty much anybody who's practicing law, you can get recognized, at least how our school works. You get credits for it. You still have to pay for it, which that kind of sucks, but you get automatic credit for it. So it's better than taking a class, sitting through it and not learning
yeah, of course.
Anything.
You've learned more working for me yeah. than you did in your three. And no, I'm just kidding.
And it caps out. You can't do your whole thing, but I think like 10 credit hours of the 90 I have to get will be from here. So it's a decent chunk of school.
Well, when you showed up day one, was there anything about your law school experience that informed your ability to do this job?
I would go with no, because
you knew nothing.
Yeah. Your first year, it's all the core bar studies and all that. They're just trying to make sure you can actually survive law school. So when you get to like your first job, you kind of don't know anything. You don't know what you're supposed to expect. In my head, I was like, I took criminal law. I should know how to do this. And then I realized, no, I don't know how nothing, to do right. anything. So,
which this is the topic. This is the shift over to the topic we were talking about, which is pay and money. What was the understanding? I mean, did you guys have an understanding, by you guys, I mean, law students in your community, have an understanding about how much you should be making?
They did not ever like disclose, like, hey guys, this is the number you should be going around. What they did tell us is if you're top, you want to be top percentage of your first semester, and then you can go to big law and you can clerk there. And if you're going to big law, they're going to take you out to like New York, LA, Chicago. They're going to put you in an apartment and they're going to pay you like ridiculously. Like you're going to make like 40 grand that summer, which that's insane for clerk money. Like imagine yeah, just over the summer, you're getting like four yeah. grand a week pretty much. That's insane for a clerk.
I didn't do that. I never even tried to do that. I walked into a criminal defense practice sort of like you did and I actually had I had some teased offers to go to a bigger law firm and do that kind of stuff. I wasn't interested, but, you know, the idea is the big law, these high dollar silk stocking law firms, whatever they are, you know, they've got the resources and what they want to do is grab talent and they're yeah. willing to invest that kind of money, to suck you in and keep you there and churn and burn. They want people to do the work, do the research. And they're willing to pay 40 grand, which sounds like a lot to a law student, but to them, it's like, well, if I'm getting all this research done, we're billing them at at X times they're at what we're paying them, and you know, we can make money on it. Or maybe they do it just to develop the talent pool.
Yeah.
So they've got a pipeline of associates coming in.
So my friends that did do those clerks, they're sucked in. They're like, no matter what, I'm going to work for them because they got a little taste of it. So they're like, I want to do that. That's it. And then there's a ton of other opportunities. Like, I have friends that clerked for like the Southern District of Ohio or the Ohio Supreme Court, and their pay was like not very good whatsoever, borderline one of the worst. But that is like amazing on your resume. Like, I imagine as a lawyer, you'd want to hire people who took those clerk jobs. I don't know. If you saw that on a resume, what would you think, since you're the hiring lawyer here?
I wouldn't care at all.
Okay.
I honestly wouldn't. I always look at it this way. In fact, I like people. This is going to a different direction, but I'm cool. I'm totally fine with it. What I look for when I hire people upstairs is more of a sort of the big picture of what I'm getting from this individual, and not necessarily an experience level. Because look, if I know what I need to have done up there, and I know how I like it done, and I almost don't like it when people come in with their preconceived notion of what they think I need to have done, and they've done this before, and they're going to do it their way. I like to train people to do it my way. And that happens in a lot of ways through osmosis. Like, you get to hear me talk on the phone to clients. You get to participate in meetings with clients. You get to see how I create my files at the office, how I save things, how we were just talking about the other day in a motion format. Look, dude, I don't care what everybody else does. Here's how I do it here. Mm-hmm. And I want you to do it this way. And the less contaminated people are coming in with their prior experience, I look at it like, the better. But I am looking for people that are open-minded. I'm looking for people that are not afraid to screw up, people that would take initiative, people that I think can, I hate arrogance. I hate it. So that is you're going to fail. If you're like number one in your class, you're coming into my office and you think that you deserve certain money, like, don't even apply. I don't even want to know. I don't want to do it. But let's say you went to I hate to say it, but I almost look for like the mediocrity. Because
so that's why I'm here.
That's right. Well, what I mean by that is I don't make it a requirement for the people that I look for that they're in the top 5 or 10% of their class. What I want to know is what they're capable of. So I want to see a little writing sample. I want to see, I want to hear you talk to me. I'd love to, if I could, in a perfect world, hear you talk to other people like outside, that would be ideal. I look for people who have a network, because that's only going to serve you well as we go forward. And I want people who are smart, right? But I guess what I'm saying is, I don't think the top 10% or 5% necessarily reflects somebody's intellectual abilities. It matters, but not always. So, and maybe it's just because, I don't know, the top 10, they're always going other places. So I'm just used to dealing with whatever, but, and your grades are good. I mean, it's not that you had bad grades, but you're none of those bad qualities that I was looking for. And that's why you're here, because you're open to learning. You're open to not doing it the way you think it always has to be done. I'll use a word I learned long ago. You were tractable, easily led, taught, or managed, meaning you can be taught. And that's what I'm looking for the most.
Okay. And so going back to what we were mainly talking about, was it money-wise, is it just ranged a lot. There's, you hear about the big law number, and then you hear about, I would go with a lot of the public work is the bottom end. And it kind of just ranges. And I think the 1L year, like, all cats out of the bag, I think Franklin County was $18 an hour for PD and like prosecutor stuff. I think that's what it was. I think some people were like shocked by that, because in their head, they're like, I'm going in the law. Like, I'm going to make a ton of money.
Yeah, good luck.
And in my head, I've worked for the government through the military. So I was like, well, I understand how it works. Like, I mean, you're not really there for the money. You're there to do public good. And there's also, government has good benefits. So that's like, that's,
yeah,
like
they part incentivize of it in other ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I get this a lot, where people come in and they expect more money than I'm often willing to pay. And some of that's governed by my experience. When I walked into working for my mentors, he wasn't even joking. He said, you should pay me. Mm-hmm. And at first I was like, well, I can't. I mean, money, but I knew he was only sort of tongue in cheek, but he paid me less than what I could have made elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I immediately understood why, because I knew nothing. I was completely incapable of doing what I later became very capable of doing. And it was an opportunity for me. And I say, I can't highlight, stress, italicize, boldface the word opportunity for me to learn the trade that I could then use in my career to make money. And I watched, I learned. I started as the guy who was, somebody had to get the lunch. Mm-hmm. That was me. I had to go pick up Aunt Fanny, one of the attorney's aunts, and take her to a doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
My job routinely was to go to the cleaners and pick up shirts. Sometimes I was the low man on the law clerk totem pole, so I wasn't allowed to go to the vet to get the medication or the special food for one of the partner's dogs.
That was for the second year law students.
That was for the people he trusted, right?
Yeah.
But doing all those things, and I was the guy who had to go to the post office at midnight to file a brief, because back then we didn't have e-filing. Mm. But I'll tell you what I learned. I learned how to do all those things. I learned how to draft a letter. I learned where to put the date, where to put the signature line, I learned some of this in high school and typing class or business classes, but you know, I learned that stuff. I learned how to get around in the city and park, and where to park, how to park without getting towed, how to get to the Ohio Supreme Court, who at the Ohio Supreme Court I would hand something to file. I learned, back in those days, we had to take briefs to Kinko's, a copy place.
Oh, okay. I was like, what is
Kinko's? I learned how to do that. I learned all sorts of things, a skill set that has really, really benefited me throughout the rest of my professional career. And none of that stuff really had anything directly to do with law. So, you know, I learned how to be a responsible adult and do things. So when we didn't have Google. So when somebody said, look, I need you to go out to X Street on the east side somewhere and pick something up, I couldn't even look it up. There wasn't even the internet. And I had to figure that out. And I learned how to do those things. And that problem solving contributed and still does day in and day out to my ability to do what I do in a courtroom. But then the next year, I got a little bit more responsibility. I could start writing briefs. This is sort of the same ladder that you're on.
Yeah.
You learned all that menial crap. And then the next year, you start to, all right, now I'm going to start doing a little bit of writing. And then I'm going to start doing a little bit of the research and the writing. And I'm going to... And you're getting more and more and more responsibility. And I guess what we were talking about, I think as law students, that's probably not discussed so much.
No, so we actually, me and my friends, we discussed it the other day because I have this joke group chat with law clerks that are in small criminal practices. I called it like a union. I call it like the small criminal practice union for clerks and all that. And it's kind of like discussion because... we were talking about how sometimes there's public workers that are getting paid more than us, but then we were also then having the discussion, what are those people doing? And it was that some of these public law clerks are like, they're literally just filing documents and not filing, like they're not drafting it. They're literally like carrying folders from building one to building two and like doing very minimal stuff. And then we were like, what is the value on what we're learning compared to them, because we're getting, our experience is like 10 times better. Like
you're learning how to be a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we were putting the union was discussing on the dollar value on that. And we were like, that's probably worth it. Because that was like, cause we're like, we can say that we've actually done this stuff before and we actually have templates and everything. Now somebody could ask me about this appealable issue. And it's like, okay, I've actually seen this like 10 times already.
Yeah. By the time you're done here, you could graduate law school, hang out a shingle and start doing court appointed appeals.
Yeah.
Because you've learned how to do that here. And you may not do it as well as I can do it. Or yeah. If you did it under my supervision, you know, for a few more years, you'll get better and better and better at it, but you could do it. And that's how I wrote all the briefs upstairs when I was a law clerk. And obviously the lawyers would review it and do whatever, but I got to the point where I was turnkey.
Yeah,
I'd hand them a document. They knew it was done, and it's not. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm patting the process on the back, because I learned that the hard way. Mm-hmm. I wasn't just vested with all that responsibility initially. And had I been, I would have learned nothing. So all of it is incrementally learned as I went. And those early problem solving skills that I learned by having to deal with the stuff that's completely non-legal related, mm-hmm. really gave me a set of tools in the bag that I use day in and day out that on stuff that is legal related.
Yeah.
And that's what's so great about the experience. Now, the question is money. This is going to sound political, but I don't care. We got to talking about minimum wage.
Yeah.
And the problem with this is that had you have come to me and say for law clerks, because I've heard these arguments, law clerks should make $30 an hour or $50 an hour or $40,000 a year, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, you started to say something.
No, I was going to say that sounds a little like 50. I'd be like, that's kind of insane. 30. The problem is we were talking about the size of firms and all that. I get there is firms out there that can pay 30, but they also have, you know, 25 attorneys or something. Like they're bringing in a ton and they have like, you know, 3 or 4 clerks, and it's just, they can't afford that because they have so much more money coming in.
Yeah. Or they're turning around and billing the 30 at 100 back to the clients of that law firm. But here's the problem with that. If I were forced to pay some minimum wage like that to a first year law student whose job really is going to be grabbing lunch and picking up this or that and sitting around and listening until you learn something. So to me, I do this, you know, I don't know, pro bono is not the right word, but you talked about it. It's like for the good of giving back. I mean,
yeah.
there is some facet of that going on where I do like to teach. I love to teach. So I do it to give back. But if the cost of giving back eclipsed the value that I'm getting, or at some point the curves cross rather, and if I had to pay too much for that, I just wouldn't do it. Because the other option that I have, and this is what law students, you should think about this. There's a paralegal, or there's a whole profession of paralegals out there who can probably do what you do better. Particularly in the realm of AI, they've been doing it for 20 years, whatever it is. I can send off a brief to brief writers who will do it. And I don't want to do that. I like to teach. But if I were forced through some edict to pay more than what that's worth, then it's not that I'll just pay it and decrease my bottom line. It's that I won't pay it at all. And I'll go hire a paralegal that I will have for a decade. Or, you know, I can really develop a relationship more. And I might even still do both, but... Like the point is like when I worked at the construction site, I used to bang nails, and day one, I showed up, I got my brand new tool belt on, I got my brand new hammer. They gave me all these tools and said, "Well, take it out of your check," and I'm all ready to go. And I had some experience cutting wood and doing stuff. I was a pretty handy guy, and my job was, you see that they were engineered floor trusses. You know, they weren't just dimensional lumber, but they're trusses. And they said, you got to carry all those over there to Tom because he's setting them over the basement and he's doing the framing. I'm like, well, like all day? We were building multi-unit condo complex.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your job today. So that's what I did all day long. And I didn't complain. I mean, I didn't even think all day. I mean, I did what I was asked.
Yeah.
Now I got, looking back on that, I was making I think minimum wage at that time was $3.35. But if minimum wage were like something exponentially more than that, it dawned on me now looking back that they wouldn't have given me a job because they would have hired an experienced carpenter and just had that guy do it because then he could at least contribute to the other stuff. Because after about half the summer, I was allowed to start using the saw. And after about the other half of the summer, you know, as I went, I could do more and more and more. And by the end, I was actually up on the rafters, framing rafters and making hip cuts and valley cuts and doing all that stuff because I learned over time and I got incremental raises as I went, but they would never have, like if they had to pay me too much to be the floor sweeper, I would never have been the lumber getter then they wouldn't have hired me to be a lumber getter. They would have hired somebody who had the experience instead of me. And then I never would have had my foot in the door to learn how to do the rest of it. And I think law clerks should look at it similarly. Don't go into a small law practice like mine thinking you're worth whatever because everybody else is getting it. Because if you do that, you're depriving yourself of an opportunity to learn a lot. So money is part of, and I get it. There's a, the curve's crossed, but if it's artificially inflated, I just won't hire anybody.
Yeah. I agree with that. And that's why the union, we had that discussion. I was like, well, like we're learning way more. So you have to try and figure out a dollar amount on that. And that's what it was. And it's a great experience. And so I would also agree that law clerks should go into a lot more of their experiences trying to value how much you're going to learn. Because I have guys, my roommate, his clerkship this summer, they didn't give him a login this summer. He literally sat and looked at a computer and walked around with them for 10 weeks.
He didn't do anything.
No, didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's a waste of time.
Yeah. So I was like, holy crap, man, that's insane. And I remember him texting me 2 weeks in, like just sending me a blank computer and all that. He's like, this is insane. It was with the lottery. So you say I got to walk around a lot of casinos and all that. Couldn't gamble though.
So a government job.
Yes, it was a government job.
This is why I hate the government. Because look, I mean, this is what I mean.
I didn't mean to trigger your rant here. I'm sorry.
But here's the thing. They're not spending their own money. They're spending your money and my money, like this unknown mass of money, this budget that they got at the end of the year that they want to use up. So they just put people there and, you know, great. But your friend's not even getting much out of it. And my tax dollars are paying for that.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's really like it's doubly bad.
Yeah. It's terrible. But there is other of my friends that were clerking that had similar situations where they didn't have them do any legal work. It was more just come hang out. And I get that that's easy. One, I think the time moves crazy slow. I hated when I would work at jobs and they were like,
I mean, it's rare upstairs that we don't have something that's got to get done right away.
Yeah. And it makes the time go so much faster when you're like pressed on all that. But I remember the military would always just be like, today we just need you to like hang out over here and do nothing all day. And those were the longest days ever.
When it was
just
miserable.
Just staring at a wall. And I'm like, this is, that was also for the government, but no.
No, I get it. But you know, in the private sector, particularly the smaller private sector, even your guys that are working for big law, they're probably at least getting jobs to do. I mean, they're saying, I mean, they're at least getting something. They're doing something. So
yeah, they're working for sure.
Yeah. And that route, look, there's a lot of money to be made in that route. And a lot of people get chewed up and spat out in that route too. You know, you get 3 or 4 years in as an associate, and you never jump up to the next level, and they don't care. They'll spit you out.
Yeah.
They'll pay you a lot, but spit you out. Look, I don't know what we were talking about here other than this. The law school experience is a unique one, but I think it's also a reflection of economics and how it sort of works, I think, in most jobs. It's like you have to find your entry level, use it to learn and move up within the system, and take your time, folks. It doesn't happen. It didn't happen for me overnight. Mm-hmm. You know, this is 30 years, and if you push too far, you get too above your skis or too far over your skis, you're going to fall, and it's not worth it. So anyway, they don't teach you that in law school. LawyerTalkPodcast.com. Check us out. Send us a question on the website. Leave us a comment. Do whatever. We'll cover it right here off the record on the air. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant. Check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.